Next speaker will be Louise. Louise is presently an investigating and inquest coroner in Ontario. She just is about to finish a two-year term as president of the Ontario Coroners Association. She's also an ER physician at the L'Hôpital Montfort. She's the only French language teaching hospital in Ontario. She's doing a number of, sounds like, public health work in Eastern Ontario. And the coolest part is she is a medical advisor to a TV show, Hard Rock Medical. So I don't get that program in the States, so I'm not sure. Starts next year. Okay. Her talk is titled The A-Team, A, as in E-H, and it's talking about the G8 and the G20 summit in 2010. I'm somewhat familiar with Deerhurst, which is where one of the conferences was, G8, G20, I'm not sure which one, but we summer up in a cottage on Lake of Bays in Ontario every year and enjoy it tremendously, and I have to drive by Deerhurst every year.
It's a lovely place.
It is. It's beautiful. She's going to talk about, she was the senior medical advisor job of an internationally protected persons program at Health Canada, and it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for her. She was found it quite amazing, and she's going to talk about that. Thank you very much, Louise.
Thank you. That's great. Which button do I press? The one that goes this way? Okay, I'm really techno-challenged. So hopefully I'll have slides very soon. I'll give you my disclosure right now. I never actually worked for Health Canada. Health Canada asked me to work on a contract basis. I was there for around 8 to 10 months, and then I went back to regular work. So it was great. It was an experience not to be missed, and it was also something I probably would never do again. It was truly amazing, though. So no conflict of interest. That's where we're at. What I'm going to tell you, sorry, I've got my mic here, so I'm going to have to hold it like this so you can hear me. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the G8 and G20 are, what an IPP actually is, what's the federal and what's the provincial responsibilities here, what roles did everybody play. I think I could hold this underneath because I can see myself fading every time I look to my slides. And what system did we actually put in place? So these were the guys for the G8. They're kind of the cool kids in class. They have the money. They have the influence. They probably have the girlfriends or the boyfriends. Certainly, this gentleman in the lower left corner had the girlfriends. The G8 is an amazing group. Started in 1975 and expanded over time. Canada became part in 76. In 2001, it stopped being in urban centers. It started going to isolated retreats. And the reason for that was partly 9/11, but also because there were huge numbers of protesters that were being injured. In 2001, 400 persons were injured and required medical treatment at that G8. 100 of them were law enforcement. The other 300 were the actual protesters. It's much more flexible than the G20. It tries to tangle with globally relevant issues. So together, they came up with an international registry of pedophiles one year. Climate change, maternal fetal health, all that sort of stuff. So it's something that is for the good of the planet. And if you're part of the cool kids, it's good to lead something like that, I think. We were the chair in 2010 because it is a rotating chair, and that's why we were hosting the G8. So the G20 is an explosion, okay? It's 20 countries, but it's also a bunch of different invited countries and international organizations. So it was over 40 different groups that all required protection, all required some sort of medical care and emergency response. So G20 started in 1999. Initially, it was finance ministers and it was heads of banks. Then there was the bank meltdown in 2008, and the heads of state got in there, and they've been there ever since. Rotating chair, South Korea was chairing in 2010, but they gave permission to Canada to host a G20. And this is where things really get interesting. This was the first time in the history of the world that the G8 and 20 were going to be held on the same weekend over 2.5 days. Not only were they going to be held on the same weekend, but they were going to separate them by 4.5 hours of drive between Deerhurst, Huntsville, and Toronto. Huntsville, isolated area, it's nice, lovely cottages and stuff like that, but not too much else. Toronto, the biggest city in Canada. 44 heads of state and organizations, 31 events over 2.5 days. So, what is an IPP? An internationally protected person. An internationally protected person, I have to read this, is a state representative, head of state or of government, a member of the royal family, an official of an international organization or an intergovernmental character, or an immediate family member of the same. Basically, it means that they have to have a level of security assigned by the RCMP. So you may see people that are outside of that, like when Hillary Clinton comes, she doesn't really fit in there, but she is considered an IPP, for example. So these are all world leaders. They're highly visible. They're at risk. If somebody wants to make a point, killing or injuring a head of state is a good way of making it. Well, good, I put it in quotation marks. Security is paramount. You have every one of these world leaders has a security person with them at all times, including when they receive their medical care. So you can imagine getting full disclosure, so to speak, might be a little bit difficult at times. Small illnesses can have huge repercussions. If you're in the middle of delicate negotiations and you have dental pain or a small headache or you start getting an eye infection, these little things can really cause great trouble with any type of work that you're trying to do. And all of these guys and the people that work with them, all they want to do, I was amazed, all they want to do is get the work done. So, for example, I had one person come in urinary retention, a person, I'm not saying who, it's just, there were many, many people, who had a catheter put in, and we said, well, do you want other stuff done? No, I got to get back to work. I'll deal with it once this is all done. They often have private physicians who do not know the Canadian healthcare system. So we had to kind of guide them through how it was done and introduce them to the hospitals and assign specific hospitals. So if they went past the level of care that the private physician could give, they could go forward into the Ontario system. So the provincial mandate, as we all know, as we've all done work in Canada, even if we may not be Canadians, is provincial. How does the federal government get in there anyway? The reason they do is due to international law. The government of Canada has a legal obligation for security, protection, inviolability of IPPs when they're visiting Canada on regular visits or for one of these major events. So basically, there's a legal obligation to ensure their health protection, and that's where the federal government comes in. So our challenge was to put in place a complete healthcare system inside a controlled access zone where no such system existed before. In Deerhurst, we put it in a spa. At the Royal York, it was in a suite of hotel rooms. And there were a variety of other ones. I'll show you them afterwards. We had to maintain all the provincial standards. So you had to do what a regular doc, nurse, whatever, would have done according to protocol, according to the best standard of care. And it had to be self-sustained, but seamlessly connected with the provincial system. If you can take care of them within the controlled access zone, great. But then when you transfer them out, the charting has to be able to be followed. Everybody has to know that what was done will be the same as what will be done outside of that line. So our mission, complete medical response to the IPPs without affecting the usual health care to the people of Ontario. Now that makes sense, but if you've got a whole bunch of docs that you're pulling out and a whole bunch of nurses and they're mostly emergency, are you going to close an emergency department because you're going to respond to this? This is why Huntsville, their emergency department could not be used at all for any of the care that we were giving because we'd completely close it down if any head of state went there or if anybody else that was working in tight negotiations went there. Complete emergency response to others in the controlled access zone. You can imagine when I show you the map, people are living and working on a regular basis where this is going on. If they call 911, there's no ambulance that can cross the barrier to come get them. So we have to take care of them as well. And seamless linkages, as I said before, between the federal and provincial systems. So, what were the venues? Whole whack of hotels. I'll show you them afterwards. The airport says arrival and departure, but over that 2.5 day period, there were people coming and going at all times. And they were going up to Deerhurst, and then they were going to Toronto. So it was something that was really 24, I would say 24/7 over 2.5 days. How's that? Conference sites, official activities, people wanted to go to Niagara Falls. There were motorcades between all the different sites. It was really quite interesting. The players, security was everywhere. We had National Defense, we had RCMP, we had police officers from across Canada. So if you went to the Westin, that was Quebec City's police force. If you went to the Sheraton, that was the Montreal police force that was there. And they were all wearing their uniforms. It was surreal. It was really, really something. Physicians, nurses, and radiation technologists were set up in our two urgent care centers, and then we had a whole bunch of mini medical clinics. There was food surveillance. Obviously, any prep that was done had to have somebody, again, right beside the chef determining what the food was going to be like. And paramedics everywhere. They were the eyes, they were the ears, they were set up for mobile response, they were doing the motorcades. It was quite impressive. Multidisciplinary approach always works when you're looking at patient safety. Our partner was the Ministry of Health. We did our planning and a response structure together. We trained the health professionals on our own, though, because we had protocols and we had equipment we had to train them to use. We had to explain to them exactly what the communication was going to be like. It was really something that they had done before, but not quite the same, and you don't want an error during something that's as high profile as this. We had a strong partnership with the base hospital. Base hospital is the hospital that directs all paramedic care. We have the Ontario base hospital that directs all the paramedics across Ontario. It has its own MAC. Site commanders that are controlling each specific spot, and then on-site orange, which is critical care paramedics, and then advanced care paramedics from Toronto, Peel, and Ottawa. Okay, so in Ontario, to a certain extent, we're lucky. I'll tell you about these. We have EMAT, we have NESS, we have orange. We have bypass and transfer protocols, identified trauma centers throughout the province, treatment standards such that if somebody has a STEMI, everybody across the province does the same thing and brings them to the same center, same classified centers for intervention, and same thing for strokes. The base hospital program has provincial standards. So you could take people from across the province to come and work, and they all spoke the same language, and they all knew the protocols, certainly those, ahead of time. So EMAT is our Emergency Medical Assistance Team. That's in Ontario. They have equipment and health professionals spread across the province. They're already pre-trained, and they have to be available within 24 hours to respond to any type of emergency. When a community requests it, the province responds with EMAT, and that's basically what Huntsville did. It's provincially run. There are close links with the federal program, and Sunnybrook, which is the Ontario primary trauma hospital. We have trauma hospitals throughout, but our provincial trauma hospital is Sunnybrook in Toronto. National Emergency Stockpile System, or NESS, is pretty amazing. It's run by the Public Health Agency of Canada. It can get a complete field hospital up within 24 hours, over 200 beds. It has to be set up in a pre-existing building, so a Walmart, a skating rink, a community center, something like that. They can put it all in. There are modules. And those modules, you can have an OR module, an ICU module. What we were looking for was the emergency department module. We didn't really worry about the rest. We wanted to stabilize the really sick guys and get them out. We weren't going to keep them vented for a couple of days. Our modules for NESS are throughout Canada. There are two caches in Ontario, which we had access to. The province has to request. The federal then responds. Everybody's very polite. We're all very Canadian. And it's ideal for our urgent care centers. So orange is our air ambulance program throughout Ontario. Critical care, they worked side by side in the urgent care centers. So these guys know how to deal with chest tubes, with trachs, with vasopressors. They know how to deal with anything that would require a critical transfer. So they worked in the clinic. And then if a transport was required, they would go with the IPP. And I would say one of our greatest honors was when the President of the United States, his team said, if there was a problem with the president, they would transfer via Orange instead of via their own ambulance service, which is quite impressive, let me tell you. So the red that you see around there is a controlled access zone. I just want to give you an idea of how this worked. So controlled access zone is in the red, the yellow is the interdiction zone, and past that you would have a blue area called the surveillance zone. The surveillance zone, people get picked up because they look suspicious. The interdiction zone, you have to have security clearance. It takes a few months to get that security clearance to work in that area. And to get through security, it's over an hour and a half to get through. So you're in the interdiction zone. You're not even in the hot zone yet. To get into the red zone, you need even higher security clearance, and it takes another hour and a half to get in there. So you can imagine, if anything happens in there, nobody's going to come in and save you. You have to have everything there that you may require. And if you send somebody out, they're not coming back. So we had two physicians working at Deerhurst in the clinic. Those physicians were staying there. If one of them left, the other one would be taking care of absolutely anything else that might come through the door. So we had three controlled access zones, Toronto, beautiful Toronto, Lester B. Pearson International Airport. We used the infill terminal that had been mothballed for the past 10 years. It had not been used as an airport for 10 years. We refurbished it, and we used that for the arrival of the dignitaries. And then there's Deerhurst, which is absolutely gorgeous. So this is Deerhurst. It's all one controlled access zone. There was a fence that was built all the way around there. There was national defense in the water and in the woods, watching to make sure nobody went over that fence. This is Toronto. Toronto, over 100,000 people lived in that area. The blue is the surveillance zone. As you can see, there is the red controlled access zone. That's where the Royal York was, the CN Tower, Intercontinental Hotel, the Metro Toronto Convention Center. They were all used for this. And then down there in the right-hand corner, you see the Westin, which was another controlled access zone apart from the other. And the IPPs were going back and forth and back and forth. Then up there, you see that kind of slotted red thing? That is the Sheraton. That was a porous controlled access zone. Now, that was amazing because we had controlled access for some dignitaries, and then above and below were tourists. So it's just surreal. The whole thing was completely surreal. So we were doing a lot of transfers, making sure there was medical care. So on the top right corner, you see the airport, then the motorcades coming down to the top left, which would be Toronto, and then the helicopters going up to Deerhurst. The dignitaries, the G8 guys, stayed there for 24 to 36 hours, and then they got airlifted down to Toronto, and all the other attendees of the G20 went directly to the Toronto venue. A lot of people took vacations in Toronto that year. A lot, well, that year, that weekend, that area was empty. People knew that this was going to be messy. We used the incident management system. So all these groupings reported, sorry, I don't mean to spit into that. They reported into the incident commander. Those greens were the incident commanders that then reported up to the Health Operations Center. And our site commanders were joined at the hip with the RCMP security guys. So if anything was happening, they would be aware. So, are we ready for the unexpected? Well, we were chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear ready. We had done our training. We all had our fit testing. The healthcare teams were taught how to dress themselves and run. They were not expected to take care of people because that takes months, 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 years of training. So all of us knew how to get out safely. The CBRN paramedics were embedded with the RCMP. So if there was an incident that required medical care, they were the ones that were going to be giving it. And if you've ever worked, has anybody worked in that type of protective environment? You know, did the whole suit up for CBRN? Okay, so you know what it's like. You can't take a pulse. You can't hear anything. You're lucky if you can see something, you know? So giving medical care when you're suited up is really quite a challenge. We were ATLS ready. In fact, we had blood in Deerhurst. We had to go through Canadian Blood Services and have a fridge and have everything monitored. It was crazy. Just have blood just in case, because we knew that we could not get blood otherwise. We had extra toys, the Tona pen, the slit lamp, air cast, glide scope. We had everything that we thought we could possibly use. We had the fast ultrasound just in case. And you know what? We used most of this stuff, except for the obstetric neonate stuff. So what was the reality? Completely different situations. On the left, you see Deerhurst. Everybody's having fun. It's exciting. You know, everybody's joking. Angela Merkel invited all the other leaders for a beer down in the bar. It was amazing. On the right-hand side, you have Toronto. Incredibly stressful. Everybody just waiting for something to happen. On the left-hand side, Deerhurst, nobody saw the fence. You had to go looking for that fence. On the right-hand side, the fence was very, very evident. Left-hand side, there was one protester. There was actually a little kid there, too, who was protesting. They wanted a cookie. On the right-hand side, when I was coming down, because we had to drive down from Deerhurst to get to Toronto during this transfer time, this is what we were seeing. There were three police cars set fire. There was windows being broken all over the place. There were tire fires. It was a different world. It was not the Canada that I thought I knew. So we kind of did a little analysis of what we did in the clinics to figure out, you know, did we actually do what we're supposed to do? Did we use what we're supposed to use? On the left is the Deerhurst Clinic. It's arranged according to CTAS code, Canadian Triage and Acuity Scale, 1 to 5, One is resuscitation. Five is kind of why are you here? So you can see in the rest of the other are for the G20, those other six. So on the left, you see a curve that looks like a rural emergency department. We did see cases of anaphylaxis. We did see cases of chest pain. We saw stuff that you'd see in an emergency department. When you look at the others, you can see that the lower acuity was much, much higher. And that, we realized afterwards when we did the analysis, was related to all the security people. If you're standing for 12 hours in full body armor in the heat, you're going to get headaches, dehydration, back pain, rashes, all sorts of stuff. So that was the sort of things that we were seeing. It was more the security forces that we had to take care of that were within the controlled access zone. So here are the breakdown of the patient presentations, what we saw. As I said, we had a case of anaphylaxis. We had an electric shock. We had new onset diabetes. We had a STEMI that we had to transfer out. We had an abdominal pain that turned out to be an appendicitis that we transferred out as well. And then a variety of other things that you'd normally expect to see in an emergency department. We used our slit lamp. We sutured up some lacerations. It was kind of fun. We used the ultrasound machine 3 times. You got to use your stuff. Otherwise, they won't give it to you again. So 164 patients were seen. 5 patients were transferred out. You see that 2 refused transfer because these guys want to get back to work. We did an EKG, say for a chest pain, said it looks okay, but you should get some tropes and you should get further evaluation. No, EKG's fine, I'm gone, see ya. The 5 that we did transfer, 1 was the appendicitis, and the other 4, 1 was the STEMI, and the other 3 were chest pain, NYD, that required further workup. So I think in the end, we did meet our goal. We took care of a lot of people that otherwise might have left the controlled access zone. We got other people back to work. If you notice, we did not transfer out the anaphylaxis. We did not transfer out the electric shock. Those people were monitored, felt better, lay down for a little bit, went back to work. So it was quite an interesting group. So all that to say that in the end, I think that teamwork does pay off. I got to meet some incredible people. I didn't put up all the different physicians from the countries that came, or the other healthcare services that we connected with. But we worked on the federal, the provincial, and the local level, and it was an amazing experience not to be missed. And as I said to Phil after that, I will probably never do that again. Thank you.